Hello, friends, and welcome back to Bon Ami, the podcast about navigating friendships in adulthood. I'm your host, Allison Nowak-Shelton, and today's episode is about queer friendships, or friendships among queer folks. What does friendship mean in queer communities, or to queer folks' personal sense of community? Let's talk about it. I had the great, great privilege of interviewing a smattering of truly amazing people for this episode. I can't wait for you to hear. First up is my dear, dear, longtime friend Amanda Madden, an award-winning filmmaker and total visionary who talked to me about the concept of queering friendships, among other things. I next spoke with a group of close-knit queer friends and powerhouse people whose love and respect for one another are the epitome of relationship goals. And then I was totally blessed to talk with Danny Halusim, a licensed marriage and family therapist and co-host of the podcast Therapists Talk TV, and his friend Jared from the comedy art collective Everything is Terrible. To preface this first interview, I had not and still haven't seen my amazing friend Amanda Madden in years. Once in a while, we reconnect, and whenever we do, it's in a big way. And we reference our most recent reconnection in the interview. Amanda is incredibly busy making films, editing, making women-led media collectives, art, teaching scriptwriting to undergrads, winning awards. It's hard to keep up. But I do get a great newsletter once in a while. And after hearing and reading about some of the changes in their personal life, including redefining their queer identity, I suddenly felt really bad that I hadn't been more in touch with Amanda. Did Amanda know I supported everything they were doing, feeling, saying, making? Were we still close? To remedy this, I decided to just send an email. It was a long letter, and I won't bore you with the whole thing, but here's a gist. Quote, I think about you a lot. Not just because I watched your film, Dear Elsa, but just in general. I mostly think about you in terms of regret, which is not your fault and really not even mine, though I blame myself. It's just the passage of time. It's normal. I regret that I've not been with you through your processes of self-discovery. I regret that I wasn't there in your corner, witnessing and supporting. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I am so here for all the ways that you have recaptured yourself and your life, but I only wish I were more intimately acquainted with them. I suppose that's just what happens to so many of us in so many ways. Unquote. Amanda wrote a beautiful and even longer reply expressing that, by contrast, they felt like I was in their corner instinctively, that I had been there. They wrote, quote, I remember thinking, but of course you know, because you're one of my best friends, and it happened, and so you felt it too, and you were just there with me the whole time, even though nothing was ever spoken. Anyway, here's part of my conversation with this beautiful human. Listen while I go cry. So the podcast is about adult friendships, which you seemed really interested in, and we were talking about it a little bit, and then you actually suggested we should talk about queer friendships. So can you tell me at all what made you want to talk about that topic?
I think queer, I'm like, okay, I have like a million thoughts in all the different directions, but I think there's so many interesting things about around the idea of queering friendships or queer friendships and like the way that we like prioritize romantic friendships or prioritize romantic relationships feels like I know we've talked about this before. I was like, just friendship in general feeling like undervalued, you know, and it does feel like queerness sort of like breaks those rules. Like, you know, like I feel like in like hetero world, like it's like they're like gender binaries get enforced in friendships, you know, where it's like I hear people talking about it that way, where it's like, you know, like you have your girlfriends and then like your partner has like his guy friends. And it feels like that's like really, really enforced in like the straight world, you know? But then like, I'm like thinking about like being a queer person, I feel like friendship can be like very confusing sometimes. Like you know, like growing up, like I had these like really close friendships that like later when I was out, I like looked back and I was like, oh, I was in love with that person, you know, like I, like so many of those, and like from youngest age, like through college, you know, and it was just as like friendship felt like the closest way I could get to even the kind of like relationship that I like, romantic relationship that I wanted. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, it totally does. That's, I mean, in a way that's really sad.
Yeah. It's, I think it's hard. It's like, yeah. It's confusing because I think like, you know, I didn't have the language to be calling myself queer. So I couldn't like establish that with a person. So it was just this like gray, confusing thing of like, oh, I'm so drawn to this person and I feel so like connected to them and I'm so attracted to them. And it's like, is that just friendship? Like, right. If I don't believe myself to be gay, then like, how am I interpreting those friendships? And like, I also like feel like I was I felt somewhat like rejected in intimacy with those, like a lot of those friendships, I think kind of like the way that they changed, like they changed over time in this way where it was like, as I was seeking that intimacy, I think as I was coming out, those relationships were just friendships for those people. And so they like couldn't sustain like these other things that I was seeking in them.
That brings up so many things because I'm thinking of, you know, just the idea that if you don't see yourself, right? Like if you don't see these relationships, if you didn't grow up like seeing queer relationships or, you know, gay relationships or what have you, then yeah, how are you supposed to interpret your own feelings basically? So much of that probably is representation.
Yeah.
Also just this idea of like, you know, when you're young and you're exploring intimacy anyway, there are so many things that come up when you're like a kid and growing up of just like, where are the boundaries and who is this person and who is that person and what is intimacy? And then to be on top of that, like not really given the models, you know what I mean? And like you said, the language.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah, it does feel hard. It's funny. And it's funny too. Like, I feel like even still, it's like, I'll think back about somebody like, and it'll surprise, I'll be like, oh, I was in love with that person, you know, like, or I was like, and like, it's not like I've like worked through them all. Like it's still like catch me off guard.
Wow.
Like, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
Like, oh geez.
So there's sort of this feeling of like kind of confusion. And I think it still happens, you know, where it's, I think the like surface level thing is like trying to read if somebody's like gay or not, you know, or like having a friendship where I'm like, I can't, yeah. Like, it's like, it still feels blurry to me sometimes with people where I'm like, I can't figure this out, you know? I'm like, and that does feel like particular to queer experience because these like, and gender. And I think like breaking down some gender binaries, you know, where it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's super interesting. But then, so there's all this like reject, like it feels like there is like a lot of like, kind of like rejection and like having to figure that out. And like, as a young person, but then I like also really like to think about like, kind of like the reclaiming of it or something, like in the messiness where I'm like, also, I think there's so much beautiful possibility, like that queerness, like makes friendship this like really like expansive thing in a lot of ways, because it does break some of these rules.
Yes.
And so like, yeah, you I think I know more. I don't know if that's true, but I'm just like thinking about the all the different like layered types of relationships I see in that feel like types of queer relationships, you know, where it's like, yeah, that's my friend that I sleep with.
Yeah.
And that's my like, you know, best friend that is my life partner. And that's my co-parenting friend. And that's, you know, like we're raising children together and like,
yeah,
you know, this is my like partner, and this is my like romantic friend. Like that's something I like am so into right now is this idea of romantic friendship.
Oh like, my gosh, I love that.
Yeah. And oh, and that's what I was thinking too about being a young person is like, there are some really beautiful elements there too. You know, like I think, like I'm thinking about these two like best friends that I grew up with, you know, and they both identify as women. And like, I think growing up, I learned so much about my sexuality, like because we had this like intimate relationship. And it like, it was like, I think I learned like from them what loving women felt like. Oh. Even though we don't have any type of sexual relationship and never will. And it's not like there is romance there, wow. You know?
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I'm thinking just as you're talking about this is something that's been on my mind a lot is, and I never really paired it with this idea of friendship, but the idea that, these grayscale relationships, right? Like everything's just on a scale, right? And I love, you know, that so many people, especially Gen Z, honestly, I give it up for Gen Z all the time. As a Xennial myself, as an old dried up Xennial, just this idea that like, you can be whoever you want to be. This other person can be whoever they want to be. And whatever you guys have together, you know, be it romance, be it friendship, be it this, be it that, can just be. And, you know, it's kind of like that. I don't need to put a label on it. And yet at the same time, we have a billion labels now. And sometimes I hear, you know, like my boomer parents talking about like, oh, what the heck does that mean? And like, why do you have to call yourself, you know, this new thing and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, it's actually really beautiful that you can just think up a new label to define something that you just discovered, like a new kind of relationship or a new kind of way of thinking about yourself.
It's so validating.
It's very validating
to have words for things. And also I feel like so many of those things, wow, like feel personally new, but like, or maybe the words are new, but like there's been unspoken versions of them forever.
Exactly. And kind of like what you were saying, I mean, if people didn't really see themselves and didn't hear those labels and didn't think that other people were like that, then how are you even going to know that that's how you're feeling? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I love it. I love all of that, but I never thought about the idea that at the beginning you said queer friendships and queering friendships. And I feel like this is what you're talking about is like queer, like queer your friendships.
Break the binaries, break the rules. Like, yeah. Well, and that's where I also think about being somebody who identifies as poly, I feel like has also taught me a lot about, I want a vast relation, like range of relationships in my life. Like I want every kind. I want these like circles of, you know, of all these different relationships with people. And really like the common thread to me is that like, we just negotiate what that is together, you know, and that it's like this ever evolving thing and that it will change and then we'll talk about it. And that like, I think that's what feels important to me about identifying as poly is like, and I don't know, I've been like reading about like relationship anarchy and stuff lately, and which I don't know if that feels quite right to me, but like, I do really like this idea that like, there's no expectation, there's no external expectation around any particular relationship except for what you determine together.
Wow.
Like,
is that what relationship anarchy is?
I think that's my understanding of it, but I could have that like so wrong. But I think it's just, it feels really nice to me, you know, like that like partnership doesn't actually mean anything inherently. It means like what the partners decide that it means. Yeah. And that feels like radical to me because it's like all these words, there's all these like assumptions and expectations built around words like partner or friend or lover or wife or, you know, ooh, what if we just like wipe the slate clean and be like, you are here and I'm in here and like, let's just decide what is right for us. And like, it could be literally anything, you know?
That's amazing. I feel like I'm going to cry actually just having you like describe that, because in a way it does feel so radical to hear you talk about that. and also just really logical, honestly, and like very reasonable. Like, oh, guess what? A relationship built completely on our communication with each other about what this relationship is and like who each other is. Wow. Huh. Amazing.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk? Like, you know what I mean? And yeah, God, why aren't we all doing that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it does, I guess, and that's where like, it does feel like queerness, I think queer folks know how to do this a little bit because like they've had to navigate those relationships in those ways to like protect them and to even have them and to like claim that, you know, so yeah. It feels like some of that work is built into queerness.
That makes so much sense. Well, let me step back a minute, actually, just because, so you said, I mean, if you don't mind me asking, so like you defined yourself as poly. Can you talk about that for a second? Just for the podcast listeners.
Yeah, totally.
What do you mean by poly?
Ooh, this is good. I like, it's so good for me to have to like articulate this because I just like feel it, you know, and I've like identified this way for like 10 years. So it's like, it's morphed a lot over time. And it's like, you know, I think at one point it just meant like, I have a partner and I want to date people. It, like the first, you know, like my first explorations of, which I feel like I was talking to you about, you know, when I was like thinking about these things, but the origin of that for me was coming out and like being in a relationship with a man that I wanted to be in and also wanted to date women. And that felt like the way to do it. And also, and then like, as I sort of learned and explored that, like monogamy just made less and less sense to me. It's just like, it doesn't make sense for me. It just like doesn't, you know? So I think poly for me, like now it feels like this much broader definition of like what I was saying is like, I feel like I'm poly in the sense that that's how I think about my friendships. And like, it's just that I don't want to be limited in my relationships with people. And I want this like expansive network of all these different types of relationships with people, like romantic, sexual, platonic, friendship, family. That's a tangent, but remind me to come back to like queer family, you know, like that's also an interesting connection to friendship. Yeah. I don't know. Did that answer your question?
Yes, like, it does. That's beautiful. I love it. Mostly because it just sounds like so fulfilling for you. And so, like you said, expansive and thoughtful, you know what I mean?
And like people choose monogamy if you want to, like go for it, you know, but like,
do your thing.
But that's the thing is like, make it like, I just want it to be a choice for people. And I just want it to not be the assumption that people make, because I feel like I have both experienced and seen a lot of pain arise from feeling like you have to fit into those assumptions.
Absolutely. And, you know, bringing it back to friendship, you know, just this idea of like, sort of expand your definition of friendship, which can mean, you know, including your friend in your, whatever, your romance. It could mean, you know, just shaking up what is expected of you and your friendship and what you expect of other people. Right. And the fact that it can all be based on this sort of like communication of what we are. And I do think that, you know, one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to my friends about friendship is because I feel like friendship is so amorphous. It's so life sustaining. Like, we all need friends. You can't not have friends. Like, people, you die if you don't have friends. But it's kind of like going back to this label thing. Like, we only have one word, friend. And it encompasses so many freaking things. And I just don't know if we're always encouraged to define, right? Like, quote unquote, define the relationship with friends the way we are in other ways. And I think it could be helpful, honestly.
Yeah. Like, as a poly person, it feels like what is at the core of that is like communication, which I've had to learn over the long experiment of it, you know, it's like, anything is possible if there's honesty and if there's communication, you know, and like people are just being clear about what they need and what they want and like listening to each other and hearing that, you know, it just feels like anything is possible. So like, I do think I've learned some of that stuff in a poly way, in like a romantic sense, but like, that's the thing where I'm like, ooh, what if we applied that to friendship? Like,
yeah,
you know, like just this, like having check-ins with friends of like, this is something I'm trying to incorporate more and more into my friendships of just like having real check-ins about our relationship and like what it is. And also remembering that like, none of them are stat, like you said, amorphous. Yeah. And also like none of them are stag, like they're going to change over time, you know, and we will become different things to each other over time. So like, so it's a constant process too. It's not like you check in one, which I think this is also true in like, in poly relationships, you know, it's like not like you check in once and then it's done. It's like, you know, I'm like also thinking about like consent and like how like it, this kind of reminds me of how like I feel like the kink community like just like understood consent before everybody else did and like just like knew how to do it because it's like people's safe emotional and physical safety is involved. And so like kink community just like knows how to do consent and like everybody else needs to learn from you know what I mean? I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like,
yeah, that makes so sense. And that's yeah. Tying back to what you said, like the queer community, queer people might be primed to like be able to figure out and negotiate and communicate about the things they need and what kinds of relationships they want. And that kind of thing, right? That's kind of like the parallel.
And I was also thinking about when you were saying like, we need friends to survive, you know, it's like, I'm like, oh yeah. Like also friendship is radical in that way too, where it breaks this individualism thing where it's like, yes, we are collective humans. And like, this is something I've been trying to kind of meditate on over the past like year or so is we heal in relation to other people. We don't just heal ourselves.
Oh, that is so true. And something
it's hard. I feels hard for me.
Yeah. Like, I forget. Well, we're in such an individualistic society, you and me in the US. And
yeah,
it's like you're no matter how much you hear about self-care and, you know, reaching out and all this stuff, I feel like there's just a mountain to get over in terms of us realizing that we really can reach out to each other and we really can rely on each other. I know I struggle with that a lot. It's actually one of the reasons I wanted to start the podcast is because I'm just like, I have such great, amazing friends. Like you're one of them. In a way, we did that over email, like the friendship check-in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, hey, been thinking about you and really love you and not sure if I've been there for you. And you're like, my God, I feel this way too. And like, you know
what
I mean?
That was a beautiful check. I feel like that was a beautiful check-in. Like,
oh, good.
It felt so good. It like, that's the other thing. It's like, it feels so good. You know, I think there's this fear of a check-in being like scary. It's like, or boundaries being scary or naming things being scary, but it's like, or like that it's going to be too much work, you know, like, and I'm like, well, I think it's actually, it is a little bit of work, but I think long-term it like sustains things in this way that's like less work than guessing and assuming and like trying to, you know, wrap your head around something so nebulous.
and you know, inadvertently or on purpose hurting each other and the things that come along with not checking in with each other.
Like I think that's why I appreciated that check-in so much, but and it just felt like so efficient. You know, it was like, it felt like we just got to the thing and then it was like, cool. Like,
yeah, we're good.
It just like opened a door of possibility too, you know?
That's so true.
Well, it's also a generous thing, I think too, to be for someone to be like, hey, I have a question about this or I want to know. It's like that. It felt really generous to me. I'm like, wow, this person I care about is like interested in knowing me in this way that like wants to put work into it, wants to learn about it, wants to like cares enough to ask. Like that's so meaningful.
Oh, good. You know, you were just saying like, is it scary, the work involved or something? I know I was a little anxious reaching out to you because we hadn't talked in a while. And I was just kind of like, I think where my fear usually is like, have I let this person down? Mm-hmm. Have I inadvertently, you know, like ignored this person or not really kept up in the way I should ever, not checked in when I needed to, and now is this too late type of thing? I think on a micro level, that idea of like, can I text this person back who texted me like last week? I feel like I hear this a lot from people are just like, well, now it's just weird because I've waited so long. And it's like, actually, it's not. I don't think it
ever was too late. I think people are in their world and in their times. And it's like, we're not going to hit like this every time. We're going to like, sorry, bad to do visual things.
Oh, no.
Bad to do hand gestures. But like, you know, I don't know. I also like room for flexibility and room for messiness and failure feels like such an important part of friendship. Like,
that's so true.
That people can mess up and it's okay. And like, I mean, I think I'm seeing so much in my life, like the friendships that feel the best are the ones where like I've hurt people and they stuck it out with me, you know,
they like worked through it with you or.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Or like trusted me to, you know, kind of be able to like repair harm that I did or to be a messy person that didn't get it right.
Mm-hmm. I know my regrets with friends are usually two things. One, I like to say the people I Irish goodbye'd, where I had a tendency in my younger life to move around a lot and I'd make these like great, great friends. And then I'd just peace out, leave in the night and like not talk to them anymore. And it was purely not because I wanted to let them go. It was purely my own anxiety and fear of like goodbyes and not knowing how we were going to keep in touch and not wanting to deal with it, which I totally regret that. My other regrets, and there's not that many, but are times when I feel like I messed up, but then didn't put in the work to like apologize and learn more and move through it. But instead just was like, well, that's done. You know what I mean? Just like, well, I fucked up. I'm leaving. I'll just see myself out. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that's so interesting because it's like, there's this, like, where does that idea of a timeline on come from? I wonder,
right.
or like some urgent or some urgency. I'm thinking about like, I feel like in the past year or so, I've like connected with old friends that I haven't, like more and more like old friends that I haven't connected with for a long time. And it's made me think about like just slowness, which is also something I'm thinking a lot about in general, is like slowness being like maybe the answer to everything. You know, I'm like, actually, but like what if I trust that like a friendship exists over the course of a lifetime? And so like just remove some of the urgency from like, I have to figure it out right now.
That's basically like such a great argument against all social media.
Yeah.
And not just social media. I don't think social media is evil or anything. I love Instagram, but just this, you know, idea that has been churned over a lot in the past few years in our culture of, you know, what is this doing to us? And like, not so much, you know, the tech and the this and the that, but, and you know, the alerts and all these kinds of things that we're always worried about, but also just that, like, why can't we just embrace the slow?
Yeah.
Well, then you get FOMO, right? Like you get all this other, like just this rapid kind of like urgency of, well, I need to figure this out right now, or I have to respond right now, or I have to.
Well, and then it also feels like that means that then friendships are defined by certain things that I don't think they are, like some certain timeline or some sort of expectation around communication that we never established, you know, like that feeling of like, oh, I didn't get back to that person fast enough. But it's like, well, we actually didn't, nobody said they, you know, I mean, that was never established. So like, where is this coming from? This like, this like both this like sense of failure.
Right.
And
right.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I had a friend reach out from college and we had kind of a intense end to our friendship during college, but then like, you know, have followed each other on Instagram and like have just like very small messages over Instagram. But she recently like reached out and like wrote like a letter, and like she said something at the end of it that was like, please don't feel any rush to respond to this. Like, I am so curious to know about your life and I like am so excited to connect, but I like want it to happen with spaciousness.
Ooh.
And I was like, and like letting it happen organically. And I was like, whoa, like.
That's so nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, what if I really let this move at the pace, its own organic pace, like rather than making it a to-do list that nobody has.
Yeah. Yeah. No one's
asking me.
Yeah. That's so, I love that. That's what a nice gesture.
So in that interview, Amanda references a June 2020 article by Mia Birdsong called The Queering of Friendship, Rethinking Platonic Relationships Guided by LGBTQ Models. Birdsong writes, quote, "There is a line to cross toward more intimacy and interdependence when we put aside the modern conventions of friendship and get up in one another's business. On the other side is not a single alternative or even just a handful of options. There's a whole spectrum of possible relationships. The culture of a friendship is something we can make up if we take the opportunity to talk about what we want it to be. That infinite possibility is freeing." Unquote. I next spoke with someone I recently met in Kechi, who very generously offered up a whole queer friend group to Zoom meet me. I wanted to know about group dynamics. How important was it to their group that they were all queer? What was that like? Was it different than hetero friends or mixed friend groups? This is all I meant to ask them, but what I got was a much, much richer discussion of queer identity, the politics of friendship, and frankly, the meaning of respect and love between smart, accomplished people. I also floated Amanda's thoughts by them, and they had some interesting new insights into the discussion of openness and negotiation in relationships among people who identify in various ways as queer. Take a listen to Nkechi, Alex, Allie, Hannah, Maddie, and Rebecca here.
Maybe you guys could introduce yourselves if you don't mind.
I'm Nkechi. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm in Los Angeles.
Hi, I'm Alex. I also use she, her pronouns, and I'm in Weekiwachee, Florida.
Yeah, I'm Allie. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm also in Weekiwachee, Florida.
I'm Maddie. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm in Boston.
I'm Hannah. I also use she, her pronouns, and I'm also in Boston.
We are in a relationship.
I use she, her pronouns. Name's Rebecca, and I am in the Philly suburbs.
Cool. Well, welcome. So like I told you over email, this episode is about queer friendships. I've talked to one of my friends about sort of like queering friendships and what we mean by friendship, but also just the idea of queer communities and friendships between queer folks as well. But first of all, how did you guys all meet and how or when did you all become kind of a crew?
Well, we met in college. We went to Bryn Mawr College. I'm a year older than everybody else. I had to be the awkward senior who hung out with everyone when, like, after I graduated when they were seniors. And I guess I think we kind of all started to like be like a cohesive crew, actually like towards the very end of like your guys's college career. Like we were all like kind of friends individually, but I don't know if we were like, we have like a group chat and it's called Very Important, and Very Important didn't get instituted until later.
I love that. Very Important. Just say what it is.
Yes.
This crew is very important. That's cool. Nice. Well, how have you guys stayed in touch? How long ago was that you kind of all synced up?
It's interesting, actually, because I think that the pandemic really kind of brought us a lot closer together. We had this group chat from shortly after when the majority of us graduated, which was 2015. And then we would talk kind of periodically, and I would say kind of individually, we stayed close with like various individuals within the group. But I think that the pandemic happening really kind of inspired us to continue talking in more of a group setting. And I know for me, I mean, other people can speak to what they think about this, but for me, I think it really, once we started talking again as a group, it just kind of clicked in a way that it kind of made me realize that some of the in-person relationships that I felt like I should prioritize actually weren't as important to me as some of these relationships. So I do think that was a game changer in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think I've said this to the group before, but one thing that happened for me during this time was like, I realized that, you know, people I've, now that like vaccines are rolling out, I've heard people having conversations about like, what's something you want to like keep that was like a lifestyle change you made during the pandemic? And like, what are things you're excited for them to go back to normal? And I definitely felt a lot of pressure to not prioritize relationships that were like long distance or contact that was virtual. Like if somebody invited, like a coworker invited me out to drinks, I would never feel like I could like turn that down because I had like a FaceTime like with friends, or like I was going to do that. And now I feel like I absolutely can prioritize that. And like these relationships are like the most important to me. And not that like I wouldn't ever like go get drinks with a coworker, but just that like these are my people. And just because like we're far apart, and just because like the way we're talking is FaceTime, doesn't mean like I have to like downplay it.
For sure.
I kind of build off that, and just like the importance of these relationships, like I think has really solidified for me, like these people are my family. Like, and I think I like am more and more like treating them as such, just in terms of like when I think about my future and what I want it to look like. I think like when I first graduated, I was like, I'm gonna set off on my own, and I'm gonna not, you know, I'm just gonna take whatever job I get and live wherever. And I was really miserable for a while because I think like I was like trying to find community in other places where I didn't necessarily have it. And now it's like, and I feel very grateful to be able to kind of be in the position where I can potentially start to make those choices of like, I want to, you know, live in Brooklyn.
Allie lives. She's living
or, in, or I want to live in LA where Nkechi lives. Like,
it's going to tear the purple apart.
Or I want to live in Philly where Rebecca slash like my bio family is. but that's the thing. Like, I think like I'm starting to look at my life and make those choices and realize that like very much, and maybe more than before the pandemic, that I am taking the people on this call into consideration more than I maybe would have, you know, a year or 2 years ago.
Well, how much, so, I mean, Alex, you said that this is your community, this is your family. I mean, I guess I'll just go ahead and ask, how much do you feel like your personal sense of community is maybe colored by the fact that you're queer, or that you have a queer community in particular?
I definitely think I feel like kinship because of the queerness. And like, I also feel like I met all of like these people when I didn't come out until college. So I didn't really realize I was queer until college. And so like part of it is that like I got to come out, and like, you know, all of my friends got to watch me on my journey of coming out and, you know, starting to date women and starting to, yeah, just like really kind of figure out myself. And so, but I also have I always like, it doesn't automatically immediately like stick like, oh, like we're a queer friend group. It's like, oh, like I've known these people for almost 10 years now and like have gone through so many experiences. But also like, I think there is that sense of I can fully be myself because there's a shared understanding of queerness. Definitely that's an aspect to it. And like, you know, that core of like similarity, and also the permission to kind of be myself and like, you know, and I'm queer, bi, pan, like, and so like it's also like I don't have to explain myself, like if I'm dating a cis guy or if I'm, you know, dating a woman or dating someone who's non-bi, like I never have to come into a conversation and like have my sexuality questioned, which is really nice. And I know like Allie and Rebecca share that by, I don't want to identify it, but yeah, like I know like you guys share that by slash queer slash pan identity as well. So yeah. It's nice.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, something I always think about, right, is like in like TV and movies, a lot of the time, there's often like a gay person or like a queer person in a friend group. And it always drives me a little nuts because I'm like, that's not what queer people are like. Like you guys are that person's token straight friend. Like they, like all of their friends are queer except you, you know, like you're, and we're not like seeing that like in the background. And I guess like, it's funny, like I know it's not true. Like I have, I've had queer friends who like, I was one of their only queer friends and like that made me really like special to them. And it's just something like I've been like lucky in this way, I guess. Like I think most of my friends honestly are queer. But I do think like, I don't know. It's funny because it's, I don't think of it necessarily as like, I don't like, it's not like a criteria when I'm choosing friends, but it also seems like it's obviously not a coincidence that we're also close in the way we are and we are also all queer.
Yeah, I do think that like gay people attract more gay people. Like I, like even the people that I thought were straight. When I moved back to LA, I'm from here. I was like, oh, I left all of my friends, like all of the friends that I had grown to love, like including these people on the East Coast. And so I was like, I felt like I was starting all over because so many of the people I had grown up with who were also queer. Most of my friends growing up were also queer too. So they had all moved away for the most part doing other things. So like when I came back, I was like, oh, I gotta have new friends. And there were ways in which I met lots of people. And even the people that I was like pretty sure were straight, like they came out later, or you know, they were like, oh no, I've been like bisexual this whole time. And like, you know, like it just, I think it just kind of happens that way, because like Maddie was saying, I don't think it's much of a coincidence if I scroll through like all the people I've been texting, like how many of those people are queer, like basically all of them. To a certain degree, like my sense of community like kind of inherently includes people that are queer also, because it's the kind of like social, I mean pre-pandemic when we used to like go breathe on people in the real world, like most of the events I went to were like at queer coffee shops, like this like queer lip syncing event, like all the people that are going to be queer too, or like, you know, this person's friend's party, that person was probably also queer. So it just kind of happened that way. And I'm definitely grateful for it. It means that I don't have to have, like Alex was saying, uncomfortable conversations about like, oh, here's the person that I'm dating. Like they're using different pronouns now. Like that whole kind of thing is not a constant education system, like a conversation with somebody else.
Yeah, exhausting.
Yeah. You don't have to be exhausted all the
time. Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things that I value about having a group of queer friends is that I think that there is that comfort, like everyone was talking about, but I do think also it's comfortable how non-homogenous it is at the same time, you know, like there are some baseline things that we all just kind of are able to easily access for each other. And also there is a diversity of experiences within the queer community and within this group. You know, we have different identity labels. We have different relationships to our gender. We have different relationships to our sexuality. We have different class backgrounds. Five of us are white, but Nkechi's Black. That's a really big difference in our group. So there's all kinds of ways that we do still have to navigate diversity within our small group, even though there is kind of a big umbrella label that we do share that informs a lot of our experiences.
In a lot of ways, not to be like kind of like 70s second wave about it. In some ways, it feels like the identity is more like a shared political identity, like than it is necessarily like always so very personal, because definitely to echo what Hannah was saying, I think like all of us have like actually very different experiences of like sexuality and like falling in love and like who we're attracted to, and also very different like senses of like our gender and how like that relates to our sexuality. So I do think that's like a pretty big diversity, but there is like a shared I don't know, not to go all gay agenda, but there's a shared ideology.
Not to like put anything on your crew or anything, but I was talking to, you know, in a previous interview with the person who actually came up with the idea for this episode, my good friend Amanda. They were saying that there's something about queer folks who have had to already navigate so much of like they've gotten good at navigating relationships and people and genders and identities and sort of like coming to situations very open and honest and learning how to do that. And so then like the friendships you make can just be that much easier and that much more open. Would you guys say that's true?
Well, it's actually interesting because I don't know that I agree to some degree that queer people can have a lot more sort of acceptance and variance about kind of the way, I guess the way that people tend to experience their relationships. But I do think that something that also kind of happens, I like kind of blow back on that, is this like resistance to difference in the queer community. Like I do see a lot of the time, you know, friend groups, there's that Instagram account that's called like Siblings Are Dating. And like a lot of the queer couples on there, it's like very reflective of like sometimes people date people that look just like them or like dress just like them or have these kinds of like similarity things. And I do find sometimes not all queer people, but also not a small number of queer people can be very resistant to like accepting like who gets to use the labels, who gets to, who is welcome in certain spaces. Like I know just like as a queer woman who like, I mean, I'm pretty happy now that I spent some time pre-pandemic going out like to the bars and to the clubs, because by the time I was over it, the pandemic happened, and like, it was perfectly synchronistic in that way. But like, I'm very gay, but then sometimes if I go to a gay bar, I'm like read as a straight woman, which like is not my experience at all. But like that kind of thing, having to like talk about that and kind of having to like navigate that is something that I do find is different between, like, we have a queer women friend group that was rooted in our like small women's liberal college experience. And I think that that very much informs a lot of our like, you know, politic and experience that I don't actually see very reflected in other types of relationships with queer friend groups.
That's so interesting. So what are those qualities that you're talking about? Just, it sounds like you're kind of saying, you know, more of that, what Maddie was saying, more of that openness to diversity, to different experiences within your queerness or whatever, and like more of a sense of just being open with each other that you're not seeing in other queer groups? Or,
well, I don't want to make it like any like giant blanket statements about queer community friend groups as a whole, but I will say like as I
got, oh no, you're speaking for the world right
well
now.
Yes, on behalf of all of the gay people, let me tell you the problem
on my incredibly popular worldwide podcast.
but I mean, I do think like when I came back here, I talked to a lot more like men and like male identifying people than I had in like a really, really long time, having been in such a like women's college bubble. And then after I graduated, I still mostly hung out with women and like did work with women. My art was like brought me around women's spaces. So when I came here and I was like at a gay club, meeting groups of gay men who were in like friendship and community with each other, a lot of things that I heard from them was like, oh, okay, if I go on this dating app, it's not uncommon for me not to see like, oh, I don't date Black people, I don't date like fat people, I don't date Asian people. Like those kinds of things are very prevalent in like, and are very prevalent in like that kind of experience. But also like queer femme communities tend to prioritize a very like thin, like cisgender haircut type. Like there is a type that is like prioritized and promoted very often. So like, I guess my point is that those same systems and structures of power that like influence we're not immune to them. They still kind of affect the things that happen in queer community and then by proxy, like queer friendships and queer relationships.
Yeah, I think that in a lot of ways, kind of the flip side to what we were talking about earlier, like this idea that being queer, you kind of go through this personal experience that lets you open up your mind more and be willing to change and be willing to kind of meet people where they're at. I think that the flip side of that experience is that for a lot of people growing up queer, having a queer childhood and a queer coming of age can be painful. There's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of trauma, there's things that happen. And I think that kind of the flip side of the open-mindedness that that can bring is that, you know, sometimes you're very protective, sometimes you're closed-minded, sometimes you're defensive of the idea that you could be causing the same pain that you've experienced to other people. And I think that one of the things that I'm grateful for in this particular group is I feel like I found a group of people who I can really work through some of those things with. You know, I feel like I can be open about kind of where I'm coming from. And I feel like the people in this group will be honest with me about things that are my blind spots, and that those, you know, both the ups, the highs and the lows, you know, the upsides and the downsides are things that we can kind of work on together. And like Alex was kind of talking about earlier, I really view it as a lifelong friendship all the time. And I think that that means that we're really kind of there for the progress too. And that's not always pretty, but I think it's really important. And I think that you don't get that everywhere. That's, I think, one of the values of having a close-knit group of people where you can be different things to each other at different times, you know?
Yeah.
That's freaking rad. Love it. Sorry, I interrupted someone.
Oh, no, you're fine. I was just going to echo and agree. You know, I think traumatized people, unfortunately, do sometimes have a habit of re-traumatizing themselves and others around them. And I do think that's like sometimes a dysfunction that you can see in the queer community. And I think that, like, I don't know, it's really interesting. When I think about this friend group, I don't really think of like, I don't think of it as like the queer community. Like the queer community feels like very like abstract to me and a way of just kind of like describing me and like millions of other people who have like a cursory similarity to me, you know? And this friendship feels so in so many ways like rooted in particulars of like shared experience and shared like ideology and shared like goals and like just like growth together that occurs like over time. And that's not like, you know, I think sometimes like sometimes people will sometimes pitch like a certain kind of, I don't know, like a wholesomeness of like the queer community being like really welcoming and loving. And I'm not saying that it's not those things, but like, I don't know. I think of this, I don't know, this friendship to me is particular. I guess that's already what I said. But
to the point where sometimes we have to remind ourselves that we're not fighting. To the point where like, I've seen many times like, no, I'm like, or to just be like, I don't know, like I know, to yeah. be like, oh yeah, we're not fighting. We just disagree. And then like, oh yeah, that's great. Fine. And then continue to disagree. Yeah.
Definitely, we're definitely not a group of yes women. We definitely disagree with each other a lot.
There was kind of like an astrology debate that was going on. So we were all, I can't remember why we were all at my house, but my parents' house. We were all like at my parents' house for some reason. And Nkechi and Maddie started debating astrology. And just with such amazing, smart arguments, like super into it. After half an hour.
But it'll come up like three times in the conversation.
Exactly. And like, it was funny because like me and Hannah were like, okay, we're going to go watch TV. And my mother was enthralled. She sat and listened to these two debate astrology for like 2 hours. And my mom was just like, it's like, both of them have such good points and it's so interesting. And like, I don't know anything about astrology, but I just wanted to keep listening to them talking. And I feel like that's me all the time. Anytime anyone in this group has a conversation.
We'll have like a FaceTime group going, like in the group chat, and like only a couple of us will be there. Like sometimes, like I can't even count the number of times that somebody else has joined in the middle of me and Nkechi having a disagreement about something. Nkechi and I are like big debaters. We're always debating each other about something, and people will join and we'll be like, it's not a fight. Like, we're not fighting.
But we had like, we'd gone on a field trip. Like we'd been arguing about this for like hours. We are like in a creek, in a river, like arguing about it. We got in the car and we were arguing about it. We like got back to the house, had dinner and argued about it.
I think for me too, about this friendship, these are the most brilliant people I know. And having access to such incredibly smart people all the time who also care about me, who also will lovingly call me out on things or say, actually, I really have a different perspective on that. And what a trifecta to have at my fingertips, you know, in my phone all the time. It's wonderful.
It's fantastic. What a glue, like what an adhesive to all be so, you know, willing to like duke it out.
It's like, I love you, you're brilliant, and also I still disagree.
So one of the things that I thought of in Nkechi when you were talking about the differences and the sort of closed-mindedness that can come in groups of queer folks or like at a club or something. I mean, I've experienced that a lot. I think I'm a lot older than a lot of you guys. I'm a Xennial. Do you guys feel like the old school idea of found family being a lot more important, like with queer folks and queer friendships? Do you feel like that's kind of true still? Or do you feel like it's more just what you were talking about? I mean, you had shared interests, you had a shared school, you had shared community, and it just all came together.
We are millennials.
That's where I was going to start. We're millennials.
Thanks for clearing that up. But
I envy the Zoomers and stuff with their like, when I'm like, I see like Zoomers who are like 10 and like super out and proud, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Or like, in many different ways, but not that there weren't out and proud 10-year-olds. But
before. I had to watch the L Word to see lesbians. Like, yeah.
Now there's just so many lesbians on TikTok. It's amazing.
but I think to kind of touch on some of those things, right? Like, okay, I'll go back and then forward. So like the found family aspect of it was still like very important to me. And honestly, I think it gets played up a lot because so many, which is like not a bad thing at all. So many queer people are like experience homelessness and experience like getting kicked out of their homes, or also just like difficult relationships with their families because of their like queer identities. And like, that is still true. And maybe it's a time shift now, but so many people, regardless of sexuality, are finding this like found family idea very important due to like differences in political backgrounds. Like that was something we saw a lot this year about people not talking to their families anymore, or like, you know, stuff like that. And I think that like, we'll probably see a lot more of that community making that isn't so relegated to our like family structure. But I will say, like, just to like touch back, and I know Allison, we talked a little bit about this offline or like, you know, before about, and I'll pass this over to one of the bisexual people that it's like maybe dating men, cis men at this point in time, but like, we all do have different relationship experiences. Like Allie and Rebecca are both dating cis men. Alex is single, also bisexual. Hannah and I are both dating non-binary women. And like, I mean, Maddie's dating Hannah, but like, I've got She's the last one. She's the last one in that setup. And I do think that like there can be tension there, not necessarily between us, but not necessarily between us, you know? And I think that like that we can, I think that Gen Z also experiences that to some degree, and we just see it as more progressive than ours, which it is mostly, but also like they're probably coming up against their tension too in a way that we just can't identify with because it's so drastically different.
I remember that Alex and I actually had like a little bit of a fight a few years back when like she recommended this TV show called The Bisexual to me. And she summarized it very briefly. And she said that it was like about a woman who was identifying as a lesbian and then realizes that she's bisexual. And like, it's about her like coming out process and like her dealing with her attraction to men. And I had a very just sort of gut reaction. Like I just rolled my eyes and I was just like, ugh, like we don't need like more of that story. We don't need more stories about like lesbians dating men. And I'm a lesbian and Alex isn't a lesbian. And I think that both of us in that moment, like basically I ended up hurting her feelings a lot. And then I ended up watching the show and realizing that it was really beautiful and really wonderful. Mm-hmm. And it actually like, it made me feel like very, very bad for saying the thing that I had said. And I'm going to let Alex talk more now if she wants to, but I just wanted to say like those tensions absolutely like exist, you know, like between us, like we have sometimes, you know, different hurts and different wounds about representation.
Yeah. I don't have much more to say except I forgive you. no, but I think that was actually, that was a really important moment for me. And at the time I was like, I was in love with a cis guy. So I think like, I was like really looking for, you know who. We shall not say his name.
When we stop recording, yeah. You can. It's
fine. But yeah, like, and I think like, I just like really identified with the show. And I think I probably didn't do the best, but I also was interesting because I think I wasn't actually aware of that trope of like lesbian turns bi, or like lesbian actually likes men, which is just like, that was like, you know, a bit of ignorance on my part, you know? And I really value the conversation that me and Maddie had about it. And you know, my feelings aren't hurt anymore. I forgive her and everything's fine.
Thanks for sharing that. That's
it's really funny. I didn't really consider myself queer until like the very, very end of college. And I spent basically the 3 years before that torturing Maddie. And I really wanted her to tell me that I was queer. Like I really wanted to be told. And I would be like, well, I really want to touch someone's boobs. But I'm not sure I want to do anything else. But it turns out once you touch someone's boobs, you actually like really want to do something else. Where was I going with that? Oh, so then after college, I spent a few years, basically I met this guy. And so anyways, we're dating now. And it really, I find it very fraught being a bisexual person in a relationship with a cis man. And I think specifically having not been out for that much of my life. And I think had I been out from a much younger point or had I known about that part of myself more fully, I would not feel the way I do, but I think it feels very fraught. And it's really nice to have this group of people where it doesn't feel fraught. Like before the pandemic, I tried to join a book club. Actually, I did join a book club, but it was like with queer women. And I remember like they came over to my apartment and they all went around and I realized that all of them were lesbians. And I was like, oh, I don't think they know that. Like, it just felt really fraught. And I weirdly like never ever brought up that like the apartment they were in was an apartment where I live with my boyfriend, because I just felt so uncomfortable. And I was like, maybe I don't belong here and maybe like they don't want me here, but I really would like to be their friends. And I'm just gonna like, yeah. So it's fraught. Also, I met a Zoomer there. Zoomers are so funny. Can I say one thing about Zoomers? It's so tangential.
Please do.
It's so funny because Zoom, it's funny because like I live in Brooklyn. I go to a lot of queer bars in Brooklyn, but I feel like in Brooklyn, there's always somebody has a joke about a bisexual woman dating a man. And I think there's this weird thing where like, because younger people are a lot queerer, there are just a lot more women who consider themselves queer who like end up with a man. And it kind of does become a joke.
But I think there's like this weird tension or reaction to just the fact that there are so many younger people who identify as queer, who also like didn't necessarily go through all the hoops that maybe older people who are not even that much older and have a really different sense of identity, even though they're not that much like, yeah, in this rock climbing club, like, and it's only lesbians. And they said, no one else is allowed except like no queer women. It's, you have to identify as a lesbian. And she was like very intense about identity, like in a way that I was like, oh, I can tell you're like 3 years younger than me. Does that make sense? I feel like I just like said so many random things.
Well, I think a lot of the time people get really protective about identity labels because they desperately want that label to mean something about everyone who shares that label. And the fact of the matter is, in my experience, labels will let you down every time. And it's like totally a waste of time to like try to police it or like, you know, expend energy like thinking about who gets to identify what way. Like I see, like I'm on TikTok a lot and like I see just like the same kind of like fights just happening like over and over again. Or people are like, who gets to call themselves a lesbian? Like who gets to call themselves like bi or pan or whatever it is. And I just think like, I think about this a lot because I identify as butch and I identify as like non-binary kind of in association with that butchness. And a lot of the time, like I will see people who, I see other butch lesbians arguing about who is really butch. Like someone will identify as butch and then they'll be like, that person is not butch. Look at them, they're wearing eyeliner. And it's just like, you're never gonna, you're, like, I think like, you're never gonna get there. Like, so, like people, some people who identify as butch have the same experience as me and some people don't. And you're never gonna be able to count on a word to like bridge that. Like when you make your lesbian only rock climbing group, like people are gonna show up to that rock climbing group who do not have the same experience that you.
I saw a tweet that became a meme that was like how I identified before the pandemic, how I identify now. And it was a bunch of people being like, I was a, like, it's not going to make sense when I say it, but like people being like, I was a woman, now I'm a man. Like I was like, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, like that's not going to happen to me. Like I'm really happy for everybody, but I'm like already gay. So like that's the end of that. But at the beginning of the pandemic, I did identify as like a gay woman, like just gay. Like I didn't really identify with queer, like more so as like a place I could go, but not a thing that was about me. But like through the pandemic, I actually like landed on like asexual lesbian, which were like very, very like specific choices that were made after like a long time. Also a long time of Maddie being like, don't you think you're a lesbian? And me being like, I don't think so. I don't think so. That's not it. Just like, yeah, but aren't you sure that you're probably a lesbian? And like that took a lot of like work in that way. I think when I came out as like, when I was like, oh, I'm a gay person, like a long time ago, I felt such a like a pull to find people that, I mean, I knew a lot of people that were gay, but it was like, that was the thing that was driving me towards searching for community in this particular way. But like, in terms of like my sexuality, even though I had friends that were gay or lesbians, and this group actually helped me a lot with that, like, my experience with my sexuality was just like so radically different than the things that they were experiencing. And I like had to set, like had to kind of parse out, which like, I don't really have such clear words about it at this point, but like had to parse out that like what I was experiencing was asexuality. And like that felt different, even though I still was a gay person. It didn't take away from me being gay, but it also was like separate. And I think when I added that additional, like being an asexual lesbian, like, of course, my first thought was, do I need to go find a bunch of asexual people so that they can be my friends now? Because that's like kind of what happened the first time. But actually what ended up happening is that like now adding the identity didn't like deny this group as a part of the people that I like communed with. And then in addition, like it didn't really help me too much more. Like there were some asexual people that I talked to and I like them and we're definitely going to be friends, but it's not helping me so much that like so many people around me reflect the exact identities that I have in various ways. And, you know, there's some hit or miss things there. But in terms of sexual, like, orientation and sexual identity, I just think that, like, it's not actually the same as race or gender, for example, which, like, a lot of those experiences are inherently based on the way people treat you when they look at you. So, like, you know, that is very different from the way that people treat you when you, like, decide that you want to have sex with them or engage romantically with them. Those things are a little more removed than our general, like, hello, how are you? Great type of interaction.
Well, this is, like, first of all, I just want to say as a joke that right now my cis male boyfriend is cleaning the kitchen. Yeah. So actually this is a queer relationship. In his leopard shirt.
Yeah, no, but something I've really been thinking about lately that maybe y'all can help me chew on is just, like, it's very weird. Like, I think sexual identity is just really weird because it's kind of just like, how do you find community through that if you're in a relationship that doesn't express that? You know what I mean?
I think that's probably a good place to end. There was some talk about the gatekeeping of labels in that interview. Hyper-awareness of identity comes up in friend groups, in political activism, and in fandoms. Remember when Ruby Rose got hate-mongered off Twitter for not being gay enough to play Batwoman? But another discussion I brought up to the very important crew just now was about generational differences among queer communities. There's research to suggest that there was a lot more focus and importance put on friendship among queer folks in previous generations, and I often wonder about that. There are so many branches and histories to these questions, from historical lesbian partners being called friends and textbooks, all the way up to 12-year-old TikTokers who feel confident to both explore and rebel against any and all queer conventions and lift others up to do the same. I brought this up again in my next conversation with friends Danny and Jared. Danny and Jared are both movers, shakers, video editors, and content creators in Los Angeles. Danny is also a licensed marriage and family therapist and certified psychotherapist. And they are going to round out our very limited exploration into queer friendships. So I know a bit about Danny. How do you guys know each other, Danny and Jared?
Let's see, we met through Everything Is Terrible. We didn't actually meet until, I think, after that Kirk Cameron video you guys edited came out. And then that article, there was that write-up because he got all mad at you and made you take it down.
Yeah, like, Allison probably has no idea what any of that meant.
Wait, can you explain this? I do know Kirk Cameron, and I am friends with anyone who takes him down, so.
So, first of all, Everything Is Terrible is, I guess, the most succinct way to put it is it's a found footage comedy collective. A lot of those, like, 3-minute videos, viral videos you find on YouTube that are, like, from 80s workout tapes to Christian kids videos, we kind of take them and put them in our little machine and spit them out into 2 or 3 minute bite-sized funny videos. And so I was editing with them for a little bit. I found this video of Kirk Cameron and Ray Comfort, his ministry partner, titled How to Witness to Gay People. And so I'm like, this will be fun. And it was one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen. I did an edit of it. Some things were taken a little bit out of context, but I felt like their message was still there. For better or worse, I put it out, and Kirk Cameron and his company or whatever were not happy about it. And it got a little bit of a dust. I've never had any sort of attention like this for a video I edited before, but TMZ wanted to talk to me. By the way, if TMZ ever reaches out to you, don't talk to them.
I won't.
they're terrible.
Did you talk to them, Danny?
I did, yeah.
What happened?
They totally sided with Kirk Cameron and made us look like we were just kind of foolish.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, Huffington Post wrote a nice thing about us, though. For some reason, it got picked up by like one blog, and then another blog picked it up, and it just started to snowball. And then, yeah, that's when me and Jared started talking. Mm-hmm. But it was a little bit before we actually met in person.
Yeah, because Everything Is Terrible is kind of like all spread out in general. A lot of us that are involved in editing don't actually know each other in person. So we met a little bit online first, and then we met, and then I ended up moving to LA so we could hang out all the time.
That's so rad.
And Everything Is Terrible is a very inclusive collective. But at the time, I was the only gay editor, and then I found out Jared was gay, and I'm like, oh, cool, there's like another one of us here. And yeah, so I really made an effort to reach out and wanted to get to know Jared initially, and then it just blossomed naturally into a great friendship.
That's super cool. Well, yeah. I do want to talk to you more about that, but I did just notice, Jared, that you're wearing a Rockies cap. are you a Colorado native, or?
I'm a fan of the color purple, and I.
Okay. Okay, good.
That's his favorite Steven Spielberg movie.
Oh yes, yeah. I mean, Whoopi can't be beat, really. But okay, I just had to. I was just wondering because I lived in Boulder for 6 years.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. Anyway, that's the only reason anyone would like the Rockies. So I just had
I'm sure
to ask
great.
You about.
I'm sure they're
no,
very,
they're.
I'm sure they're very nice boys.
Maybe not. Maybe not. It's Colorado. Anyway, well, that's very cool. So
Jared's more of a lids connoisseur than a sports fan.
Oh, I see. Lids connoisseur.
Absolutely.
The only thing I know about lids is like going through the mall and like seeing that big, that like
you
very unwelcoming, by, intimidating store.
You walk by, think, who would go in there? And yes, it's me.
And it's you. It's Jared. I'm so glad to know. Well, that's cool. Well, so you're kind of saying, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but like Jared being gay, like was part of the reason you reached out and connected.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I added Danny on Facebook after the article came out, just because I was like, because Everything Is Terrible is so like spread out and we don't even know who's editing the videos. It's like, I didn't realize that I had seen Danny in person before, because they had this festival every year and they air these videos, and we were in the competition with them and they won. So I didn't realize I had already seen Danny in person before, but because of this article, I was like, oh, so there's somebody gay, there's somebody in Everything Is Terrible that is lives kind of close. I was like, I want to meet more gay editors, because like honestly, you feel like you don't ever meet anybody out here that's a gay editor. They're all like straight guys until, I don't know, we found a few in Everything Is Terrible now, but
Well, that's cool. Well, what does that mean to you in terms of like your personal sense of community to find, I mean, especially more gay editors in your words?
Yeah, I don't, Danny, what do you think?
I think the gay community kind of gets stereotyped and lumped into one type of category, which is fine for the people who that applies to, but you know, I don't find myself, and I know this is more like a local issue, but I don't find myself gravitating towards West Hollywood or that sort of scene. And but I always would like to connect with other gay people as much as I can. And so to find somebody who's also kind of outside of that scene is nice and important to me, because being gay is, I wouldn't say it's my identity, but it's a big part of me, I feel like.
I think, I maybe piggybacking off what you said, just it feels like in a lot of art spaces or just communities in general that don't typically have as many gay people, it kind of feels like even like just some video that Danny edited of like ex-Christian, or what was it, was like the, it was about how to be like, you don't want to be the only gay at the club and at the end of the night.
Oh, the ex-homosexual video.
Yeah, the ex-homosexual video you edited, because like I feel like that is so specific to gay people to laugh about. Like straight people, I guess they can get on it a little, but just the little like signs of somebody who's an ex-homosexual, and just the little like ways they try to fear bait about being gay at all. It's like, I feel like those jokes wouldn't play as well to straight people. So the fact that Danny was already editing videos like that, I was like, oh, maybe I could lean more into like gay content, because you are, when you're like surrounded by not gay people in the community, there's also like kind of like, oh boy, you're editing a video about gay people, like, ugh, like we get it, you're gay. But when like Danny is suddenly edited, it's like, this is just our reality. This is, we're not like trying to go out of our way to, I don't know, ruffle feathers or whatever. But is that rambly? I don't know.
I think I see what you're saying. Like being in entertainment and editing, especially like, you know, you're tasked with all these stories. And so if you're in a kind of primarily straight community or something, I think what I'm hearing is like the gay stories that come up, they're so, it's like all these levels of how much are you going to be invested in this and how much is it true and how do I feel about this? Whereas if you're, you know, in a community where you're telling stories about yourselves, then you just feel much more comfortable with all the nuances, right?
Totally. Like,
that are coming out. That totally makes sense.
Yeah. I, you know, our experiences are different, but there's also, at the same time, there is a shorthand. There is kind of a being in on the joke, it feels like, mm-hmm. when we're working on this type of content. Or
I know you wanted to edit a whole gay movie, but
yeah. I still would like to. I don't know how that's going to happen, though. I've been thinking.
Wait, so what does that mean? A whole gay movie?
So Everything is Terrible also produces these like feature length videos that they release on DVD. We actually tour behind them around the world. Actually, they've gone to Europe, all over the U.S. And I always had it in the back of my mind that I would like to do one of those full length movies. But of found footage just kind of cobbled together, but with a gay theme. But that's really hard to do.
Yeah,
I do have a list of hundreds of sources that I could gather from, but it's really hard to do because at the same time, unfortunately, you know, most media and pop culture references are going to be a little homophobic or a little, I don't know. I was like, how do I do this? Even though I'm gay, how do I do this without punching down or making fun of gay people? Because people won't know that a gay editor worked on this. And I haven't been able to figure that out yet.
Yeah, because you got to figure like, what's the joke here? Like, what am I making fun of? Is it like, are we making fun of gay people in general? Or like, are we making fun of the stereotype? Like, because it doesn't, It should feel like it's, I don't know, not attacking ourselves. So it's also hard to find something that's like being mean to gay people and making it funny. Like there needs to be like a camp level there, I think. So I don't know, Danny and I have talked about trying to find a way to make this work, but it just, yeah, it's tricky because like, yeah, you don't want to set the wrong tone and insult your community you're trying to have fun with and not be, you know, homophobic.
And the internet is terrible, and they will jump on that, and you know, you'll look through comments and they'll just be like the most terrible homophobic things sometimes, you know,
because they'll think you're like, yeah, we love being homophobic, and they're like, finally a place, and it's like, no, this isn't what I wanted at all. So it's
no,
it's tricky because there's like, yeah, there's the little amount of gay people in movies, and even up to like the 80s or 90s, it still was really bad in representation wise. So it's hard to use anything that isn't gonna come off badly.
Wow, gosh, I never thought about it. That sounds hard. That sounds complicated. I don't know if this is very related, but so I had two interviews before that, like something came up and people had opposite opinions. So one of my friends who actually convinced me to do this episode on queer friendships, quote unquote, their experience in queer communities and queer friendships is that people have already done so much work to like negotiate themselves and who they are and who they are in relation to other people. And maybe they've had it tough trying to like figure themselves out within a community, that then friendship wise, they can be like more open and honest and kind of, I don't know, just get to deeper levels with their queer friends, let's say. And then I talked to another group where they were like, I don't know about that, because they found that they're sometimes they would get into a queer community that was actually very rigid and wouldn't allow for a lot of diversity within, like, you know, the gay community or, you know, bi inclusive, that kind of thing. So I'm just wondering what you guys think, and obviously nobody is representative, but I'm just getting opinions about, you know, what do you think it is about your queer friendships that maybe are different than friendships with straight people or non-queer people? Or, you know, do you feel like there's differences or different valences beyond just feeling like you can be a little bit more yourself?
You know, I'm thinking of what you said, Allison, in the context of mine and Jared's friend group that we've kind of cultivated. And it's a mix of people who identify as cis, gay, male, and non-binary and trans. And, you know, we, during the pandemic, we have a group chat that, you know, we you know, text each other every day. And it feels like that group of people feels very open, that we are able to explore different topics, different ways of thinking, without feeling, you know, that rigidness that you maybe described a little bit ago. Yeah, it feels pretty open and pretty free, at least in our little friend group.
Yeah, we're all nice to each other. Like, I know that there are gay groups where there can be like their dynamic is being mean to each other and insulting each other, but we're all pretty nice to each other. Well, like some light teasing, but other than that, it's fine. But yeah, outside of like as like a straight friend group versus queer friend group, it does kind of feel like switching language, like there's a whole different set of topics that are like open up for us to talk about with queer friends that are just not even like straight people are not even aware of or interested in, which is fine because it's not their lives and they're not experiencing it themselves. But yeah, just like dating and stuff like that, or just like who are we gonna send funny Grindr horrifying exchanges to other than our gay group chat, like some scary person that asked Danny to step on him. And it's like, Danny's not going to send that to his straight friends. He would send it to his gay group chat. So
Jared, I don't know if you remember, but that chat started out with a mix of, there were some straight people in it when we were on Facebook Messenger. Mm. And then as much as we love those straight friends, we decided that we wanted something that was just a queer space for us. And we kind of broke out of that. And that's kind of how it got started. It started as kind of a mixed group, a mixed group chat.
And then it just became gay because, I mean, it's better. Gay people are better.
You are going to get no arguments from me here. Is it just because of that? Danny, do you agree with that? That like just, you know, just the chat kind of opens up a little bit more? Just in terms of topics or?
Yeah, I think it goes back to this shorthand of knowing what, you know, what arena of experiences there are by the virtue of being gay.
And like family dynamics and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
you could talk about with each other that straight people wouldn't even get, just like, it's just always kind of like a hum in the back of like, how is being gay gonna affect this interaction with this family member or this dynamic? Or so little stuff like that is like, even if that things are fine, you'll understand that if Danny is talking about something with a family member and them not, you know, accepting in the right way or something, or like we get it talking to each other, but if we talk to straight friends, it wouldn't be as quickly understood.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I, not to, date you guys at all, but like I'm basically a zennial. Like my brother was Gen X and then I'm like almost millennial. But I've been saying this a lot with interviewees that I feel like there's also just this generational thing. And then especially with the, you know, queer communities and just like queer experiences, basically with now that you bring up families, there's research to suggest that like decades ago, there was a greater reliance on friends amidst like queer people. I think that goes into that sort of found family idea. Clashes that they might have in their family. But that this might not be as true anymore. So I'm just wondering about your experience with that.
Yeah, I think we were definitely on the like, at least I feel like I see it more now just because of how pop culture has changed. It's just like, obviously it's better now that it's way more accepted to be gay. And like, shit, that Lil Nas X video is taking off right now. And it's like, I just was watching the day and like, wow, I couldn't even come out in high school. And now it's like so mainstream and so cool. And it's just, it's very like surreal to me to like, just kind of like wishing I was in high school at this time, because kids are so much more open to gay people now. Like then you couldn't even talk about being gay at all. And now it's like the bullies will come after you if you're being homophobic. So I'm like,
right. Like you were saying, you don't want to get canceled. Right.
But no, that's good though. I'm like, good. Thank you, bullies that are pro gay. I'll take it.
Yes.
But yeah, it just feels like it's changed a lot because of that too. Like now families are more open to it. And I mean, our families are still accepting and loving too, but there's like little generational, like maybe things that'll be off or something. But yeah, it definitely feels like things are opening up more now, and that's good. But yeah, we definitely come from a generation where you kind of have to rely on your friends because your family is not gonna get it at all.
Or even society back then wouldn't have gotten it. You know, I haven't mentioned this yet, but my main job, I am a therapist. I'm a licensed therapist, and video editing is something I kind of just fell into by accident and do for fun. And so I work with a lot of teens. I mostly work with the LGBTQ plus population, and I work with a lot of teens, and it's, you know, some things are the same and a lot of things are different. You know, I wouldn't say we've evolved to a perfect way of dealing with, you know, kids coming out and you know, we're post Will and Grace, but it's still not perfect. But kind of what you said, Jared, looking back, I wish I had the dealing with my internal shame and internalized homophobia that was a product of growing up in the 80s and 90s, that I've processed that now. And I wish I could go back to high school and have come out then. I was very closeted in high school. I didn't come out until my early 20s. But looking back and listening to the experiences of the kids I work with, I wish that would have been a possibility for me. There was one guy who was out in my high school. I graduated in 99. And just to give you a context of the time period. And so, and he was like the only out gay kid in school. I know he was teased like crazy, and we weren't friends, but we knew of each other. And I remember running into him at a gay bar years later, and he came up to we said hi, and he got very emotional and with when we were talking and said, Danny, I had no idea you were gay. I wish I had known then. I was the only one. It was so scary. And yeah, I wish I could have then too.
Yeah, it feels like we kind of had to have our high school lives later because we didn't get to come out in high school. So like what they're saying, like your early 20s as a gay is like your high school years, because you don't get to even experience any of high school like that. It's all like what you can't go to prom with a gay date or anything like that. Like you can't go to dances. You can't be out at all. So it was really hard to be gay in high school and not be out because you didn't have a choice. It's like you're either in the closet or you get your ass kicked.
I think a lot of gay folks from our generation have a little bit of arrested development because so many of us, like you said, Jared, I didn't have a date. I never dated in high school. My first kiss was after I graduated. Mm-hmm. I went to prom with a girlfriend. Yeah, I didn't get to have what most people think of as the high school experience, like the social aspects of it.
Do you feel like that's also true of your friendships? Like, what do you feel like you didn't have very many friends, or they didn't know you?
But then? Well, yeah. I mean, for one, I was scared to have anything to do with the guy that I was talking about earlier, because then I would be, you know, quote unquote, guilty by association. And yeah, I was pretty lonely in high school. I was scared to really let anybody, especially anyone who's male, close to me. I had a couple of female friends, but even they were kind of at a distance because I was scared to really let anybody know me. And then once I graduated and kind of saw past, you know, the little pond of high school and saw the bigger picture and was able to expand, you know, my world, you know, in a way, I was able to make connections and then kind of go down the path of a chosen family.
I guess my last question, unless you want to tell me any other fun stories, but is just what might you offer or we offer to other queer folks seeking out friendships or friend groups? Or do you have any advice?
Well, I feel like we found all of our gay friends through like separate hobbies. so I don't know how to, because like the traditional avenues of like finding a gay friend might be like go to a center or LGBT center or something, but yeah, I feel like we all found each other by accident. So yeah, I wonder, because like I never, like when I go to gay bars, I wasn't like making friends with people there either, so I like, I don't know, I never, I also, there are like club gays and I never was good at. I get tired at 9, I go to sleep early, but yeah, I just never had luck meeting friends there either. So I don't, I mean, Danny, you like go to the LGBT center. Has that ever been like a good avenue for finding friendships or anything?
Yeah, I really was interested in meeting other queer people in a kind of a platonic setting. So I volunteered for the LA LGBT center for many years, and I met a lot of really close friends that way too. You know, you start seeing the same faces over and over again, and you develop a rapport with each other and exchange numbers and then start hanging out outside of the volunteer experience. For our friendship, Jared, yeah, it felt like very natural. We kind of met organically. And yeah, we kind of just added elements to our friendship, you know, moments of connection, you know, just hangouts. We started like a queer movie night that before the pandemic, that was, we do it like once a month or something.
Yeah, we'd all pick like one gay movie or something. That's also a fun way to like get yourself to like watch more queer media, because it does feel like you have to search it out. So we like, we're like, oh well, I haven't seen this movie, well then okay, you bring that, and then each of us brings a queer movie, and then we all like, that's how I saw Tangerine for the first time, like fun movie nights. So
yeah,
love that movie. Well, that's really cool. Well, I guess I would just add that you said earlier too that, I mean, I think most friendships happen just organically. You can't really just like out an ad,
right?
Like, seeking gay friends. But at the same time, I like what you guys said about how, like, you know, you did have a similar interest. You were already in a similar, right, like pattern of people. And but then finding out that the other one was gay was like a real, you know, then it was like, oh, now I'm really going to reach out to this person and really like try and try to connect, which I think is probably good advice.
The first time me and Jared met face to face was I was having a holiday party. And right, is that the first time we met?
Yeah, I drove from Long Beach to your place, and you had a holiday party, and there were so many people, and I didn't know anybody. It was very intense. I was like, wow, Danny's popular, he has so many friends.
But I was so excited to meet you that night.
And I was excited to meet you too. It was so fun. I'm so excited for parties to exist again once you got vaccinated. Once I get vaccinated, and I
can- I was just gonna say RIP holiday parties. Like,
hopefully
I would go for a holiday party right now, but soon.
Hopefully.
I mean, me and Jared haven't seen each other in person for over a year now, which is crazy to me that that's happened. We've done some Zoom stuff, and again, that group chat that we're in, so we're in constant contact, but I miss the hell out of you, Jared.
I miss you too. Oh,
love it.
Thank you so much for listening to this extra long episode of Bon Ami. As always, we only scratched the surface here, but I hope at the very least the interviews gave you something to think about. If you are experiencing loneliness, a loss of emotional support network, or general feelings of depression or anxiety, please reach out. PleaseLive.org is a wonderful organization that has a big list of hotlines you can call to get some support and relief. 4help.org, that's the number 4, H-E-L-P.org, is also a resource library with tons of national and local hotlines you can call. And crisistextline.org provides 24/7 support via text message. Many thanks to the thousands of volunteers across the country that care enough to do that work. And a huge thank you to my guests today, Amanda Madden, the very important crew and catchy Alex, Allie, Hannah, Maddie, and Rebecca, and good friends Danny and Jared for gracing me with their time and energy. The articles and resources I mentioned in this episode can be found on the pod site, bonami.com. That's bonami.com. I'm Allison Noack Shelton, saying friendship is amazing and life-giving, and at the same time, enigmatic and hard. Keep reaching out for what you need, Bon Ami.